VentureCast. Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello, and welcome to the Social Psychic Radio Show, featuring Jason Zook. In uncertain times, we must change our focus and priorities. This show will highlight social justice issues with the goal of expanding minds and increasing unity, love, and mutual respect for ourselves and our planet. We support the Black Lives Matter movement. Our show aspires to promote social spirituality, which simply means that by coming together, we can solve any of our problems, including the goal of bringing an end to all forms of hate, discrimination, bias, or oppression. We must protect our environment, reform our criminal justice system, and protect every citizen from police brutality. When we come together, it becomes possible to bridge the gaps that plague our society and divide us from within. We the people means everyone.
Hello and welcome to the Social Psychic Radio Show. This is Jason Zook. It's a great pleasure I have the opportunity to present special guest Lincoln Stoller to the show today. Quantum physicist, neuropsychologist, hypnotherapist, clinical counselor, mountaineer, author, educator, and parent. He came from a family of artists and architects, and he became a scientist, finding inspiration in a succession of extraordinary mentors, including a Caribbean fisherman and prophet, a tribal elder in the jungles of Panama, one physicist who invented quantum mechanics, another who invented the laser, and even a mountaineer, to name a few. Stoller spent a decade climbing mountains and traveling the world. Our guest began exploring altered states of consciousness 50 years ago, psychedelics 25 years ago, and therapy 15 years ago when he developed and offered brain training protocols. Lincoln is a hypnotherapist, a neuropsychotherapist, a certified clinical counselor, author, and educator, name a few, as I said earlier, and he practices remotely in British Columbia, Canada. Using the tools he's collected, combining his experience in somatic learning, scientific theory, and consciousness, Lincoln helps people understand the reality that they create. Because he's independent and doubts everything, and he insists in finding a comprehensive personal understanding, he supports his clients in reinventing and hopefully having it happen quickly. You can accomplish everything using your mind, depending on your ability to focus, perceive, create, integrate, and understand. Lincoln says, leave footprints, make waves. It's a great pleasure. I welcome Lincoln to the show. Welcome to the show, Lincoln.
Thanks, Jason. I love your enthusiasm. I love it.
Thank you for joining us and sharing this time with our audience, because I know from looking at your information, I was saying to you before we started recording, you don't see someone who has so many different hats usually. How did you get into developing your path by gaining all these methods of, I won't call it introspection, but I would say your own curiosity that I feel like helped fuel your desire to learn as much about different things that you're passionate about as possible? And I want to ask, what started you on that journey in particular?
Answer the first thing. I was bored with everything else. Everything else bored me. I was bored with being social. I was bored with being accepted. And I was bored with doing what I was told. At first, to answer the second question, it was just constant annoyance. I was going to school and listening to teachers, none of whom really cared much beyond people making the grade. And I would be annoying. And it was a mistake on my part because I felt they would care, but they didn't really care. I could take it back a little further and talk about my family. And I have a father who was very, what do you call it? Hyperactive? No. Overachieving? That's what you call it. And then he had a mother who was abusive and demeaning and degrading. And so he had to compensate for it. But you never quite do that in a healthy way when you're trying to make up for somebody else's abuse. And happily, I was the third kid. So things got a little tempered by the time I came around. And I felt he did something great for me by having me come as his photo assistant. And then I got to see both his real world and the real world, and something that I could not exactly participate in because I was only like 10, but still it was real as opposed to all that other junky stuff. And I had a mother who was absent, so that played a big role because I never felt sufficiently rewarded. So I wanted to get more rewards. So I would ask people. It's true. There's a sort of biblical thing that you never get something unless you ask for it. So I would ask for a lot. I wouldn't get it. Just made me more annoyed. But then I would be upset, and I would be truant, and I would be a vandal, and I would be troublemaker. And like I said, I wasn't really interested in what people had to offer. So I kept doing these goofy things like slot car racing and fly fishing and map making, whatever. I didn't have a lot of friends my age. And early in high school, looking for teachers, like I said, I was asking people to contribute to my education because I felt that would be helpful. And I remember finding a few strange people. Like, there was some guy who made puppets in New Rochelle or something. And I don't really remember. Oh, and then I took classical guitar. But I also had interests. I don't understand it myself. Like I said, I was bored with inactivity, so I tried all these things. One thing I should always advise people, when you go to a foreign country, do it yourself. I would call a hotel and ask for a driver in a foreign country, and then I'd ask the driver for a place that a family who would put me up. And this is a wonderful way to meet a new place, with living with the locals.
Absolutely.
You know, forget the hotels and forget the...
That's real schooling, right? That's experiential schooling when you get to see and interact with people that are locals and teach, and you can see their shared experiences and experience it with them. I think that's the most powerful way to learn.
Oh, I got to go see what it was like to work on a banana plantation, to be a concert singer in Mongolia. And since I didn't speak Norwegian, I don't know what these people did, but I spent the night with some family in Norway. They pointed me to a canoe, and I took the canoe and went out into the wilderness. And I said, who knows?
Early on in the episode, I'm already picking up your energy, and I say that you have a keen sense of adventure in your life, in life as the adventure of life, where a lot of us maybe look at it a little different. I feel like you are this true adventurer. You call yourself a mountaineer, and I never heard that term before, and I want to hear about that in a minute, but energetically, I'm telling you, your sense and keen adventure and the desire to seek out these things that the average person may not appreciate on the scale that you do. It's refreshing to me to have you on the show because you're not in one box. Like, I don't fit in a box. And I always say that to my audience. Sometimes not fitting in any box is a strength because it shows your flexibility on taking on different challenges of your environment, the different stimuli and stuff. But all the roles that you've done, what's been your favorite one, at least personally for yourself?
It's always mixed because there are things you like and things you don't like. I really enjoy flying gliders. But I'm so bad at it. I crashed twice, broke my back, got thrown out of the club. But I like doing it. And I had to understand, why do I like what I'm not good at? Or am I good at it, but not in the way other people like? So that I really like that. And I still would like to do it, except that it's very expensive. And that's why I had accidents, because you really have to do it all the time.
And you can't sit still. You're sitting still right now, but in the big game, I feel like be out and about and with nature, or have different things on your plate that aren't just the average.
So here's another one. I liked physics, did a degree and got a PhD and did good work, but I never was accepted in any way. So I didn't become a physicist. It's a very involuted community. It's not really very creative. It sort of ended when I reached whatever. I got my PhD at 25 or something. And then I went into software and did all kinds of other stuff. But now, at age 67, I'm getting back to physics, and I'm realizing I really like it, but I don't like what everyone else does. I only like to do it my way, and I don't know if that's going to generate anything, but it has generated a few things. And what does it mean to succeed? Anyway, how many lives do you have to live? We could talk about past lives and all that, but the truth is that this is the one where we've put our money. It would be wise to arrange your spiritual priorities in this life,
of course,
and not wait till you're dying to repent for having lived badly. Oh, about 15 years ago, I started to ask some of the questions that you ask, like, why do people do this? And what are they getting out of this? And where do they find guidance? So I decided to go back to all the people that I found guidance in and ask them. And I wrote a book where I went back and interviewed a dozen people who had been major influences in my life, and I asked them about their lives and why they became what they did and how and what is done for them. And then I did the same thing to people my age who were engaged in professional pursuits and trying to achieve some goal. And I asked them, why are they doing what they're doing? What do they hope to accomplish? And finally, I found young people, teenagers, and I asked them, what are you doing? And why are you doing it? And what do you hope to accomplish? And then I made these into a book of all these people. And I was trying to figure out the answer to that question and whether it was different by a person's age or a person's inclination, their skills. Were they artists? Were they musicians? Were they scientists? Were they politicians, writers? And I like that book because I didn't come to a conclusion. I just put it forward. This is what people say.
Sometimes you don't need a conclusion to fill in the answer, right? Sometimes it's getting to that, the analysis or being able to put pearls between all the strings between all the stories.
That's what they say. It's the journey, not the destination, right?
Exactly. You have a lot of background in different areas I find very intriguing. When you got involved with the psychedelic medicine, as you call it, I wanted to see if you could share with our audience what exactly that means and how that experience in your life has helped you on your own personal journey in understanding things.
Less than you might think. I think it's a mistake, and I say this all the time and no one listens to me, to call these things medicines, because medicines means the medical system, means illness, means healing. So there are two kind of approaches. One that's popular today is looking at psychedelics as medicines. That it's a treatment for people with illnesses that is going to make you better because you're sick. You'll identify as an illness with a diagnosis, and only then will you be given permission to take the psychedelic as a cure to your illness, as a degradation of the substance and its purpose. It's like saying you have no purpose in life except to be approved by authority. And I think that would be a desecration of spirit. So I feel that medicinalizing psychedelics is going down that path. And now it's insurance, and now it's the medical system and the government and the psychologists and the academics. And I hate all that. I got into it through life as a kid, and then as a juvenile, and then as a student, and then as a mountaineer and an explorer. And I said, this might take me to somewhere new. And it does. It takes you to some new places, new frame of mind. Sometimes it takes you out of your body and you don't even know the world that you're in. That's can be pretty amazing. That's how I started. It was the shamanic approach, because shamans and cultures where they traditionally use these things are not healers. They're not doctors. They're not even considered good neighbors. They're like halfway people between different worlds, and nobody really wants to be too close to them. And that's their role. They're the gatekeepers to the other sides. And that is their job. They manage the transition. So that's what I was using psychedelics for. Visit cultures and talk to strange people.
In terms of the psychedelics that you may have had experience with, then you mentioned shamanism. Is one of them ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca mostly.
Okay.
It just fell in my lap.
What's been your personal experience when you utilized it? Did it expand your paradigm of how you looked at your place in this world and the universe? And what role did you, I know you said it wasn't as a medicine, but how did you view your experience utilizing the psychedelic aspects of things to gain your own greater awareness and understanding of things in your own life?
I'm happy to answer that, but I'll throw it back on you and saying, it's just like, am I supposed to say that you're psychic? Are we supposed
to
say that?
You can, of course. Yeah, you can say that.
Okay. So I'd say that it's a similar to answer to what you gain by being psychic. You see another world. You can't entirely make sense of it. You don't exactly know where it's coming from or what energy it's channeling or extracting. Is it the better part of you or some better power somewhere else? This is what psychedelics can do. But athletics can do it too. This is why I said that psychedelics haven't been the main source of inspiration. If you go, people like to read these adventure stories of, and I read recently that people like to watch horror movies because it makes them feel better about their lives. These are altered states of consciousness. It puts you in another state. And it's all the more powerful if you actually do it and you live through the adventure or the horror. People with cancer occasionally say it's the best thing that ever happened to me.
I can agree.
Yes. Yeah, really? Yeah.
5 years ago was the best thing that ever happened to me because I had stage 1 kidney cancer. But it transformed my view of the world around me. I got rid of negative relationships and I revamped my whole life. It was a real altering circumstance for the benefit.
So, for example, mountaineering got me to the point of saying, what kind of people do I want to be around under pressured circumstances where you're putting your life in someone else's hands? What really matters in another person? Who are you going to put up with? And are you going to keep being a competitive jerk? Or are you going to start to provide service? And is it the journey or the destination? Things like that. That can put you, and it's important to realize, as in most extreme athletics, it definitely tests your mettle, right? You are put in a point where you would really like to just go home. This is painful. And give them the chance, but you can't, of course, because you're committed. But, and that's true in many things. You get stuck. And now, is this an opportunity or is this a curse? And that's, you call it a bad trip. I don't know if you've had psychic experiences that were dark. Have you? Psychic experiences?
I have. I dwell in light. I call myself a light worker. Just as easy for me to understand it within myself. I will tell you that I've had experiences. I actually had an experience like this last night I can point to. I had a restless sleep, and I haven't had a restless sleep in literally 10 years. I'll explain what I mean. When I first became a psychic medium, my grandfather passed away and I was in a hotel room and orbs of light came to me. That's my story. And it made me realize I had this. I always knew I was intuitive, but I didn't. Now I'm talking to my grandfather. He's been dead a few hours. I'm communicating with him. I'm realizing I'm a medium. And one of the things I did for 10 years, I joke about it now, but I took it seriously then, was I made sure I didn't share it with people because I was really terrified of, I had fear that if people knew I was psychic, that it could affect my legal career because I was budding, starting out lawyer kind of thing. And then I used to sleep with the lights on for 10 years. And the reason I say this, I had a fear of the dark, because when I slept in a dark room, guess what would happen at the time? My arm would shoot in the air. Something would push me. And this happened last night. It hasn't happened to me in 10 years. What that means is I got to meditate tonight. I'm going to sage my room. I'm going to sage the house a little bit. I'm going to incorporate what I consider bringing light into the room. But it happened last night. And I was like, interesting. I have the experience now of dealing with these things. I have the life experience of it. And so from my vantage point, I could have one restless sleep, but I understood it as, when you're a medium, you're like a beacon to the other side. And if there are spirits that are troubled and they want to communicate with deceased, with their loved ones here, they'll try to get my attention, but they have to respect my boundaries. And so in that respect, that's an example of a negative experience as a psychic. Most of the time, I'll say this, whenever I've learned over the years, it's not about my ego, and you know this already. It's not about us. It's about service to others. And I've learned that my gifts and my abilities are strongest when I'm helping someone who's grieving a parent, or working on a missing cold person case with one of my best friends that we are helping try to work on that, or whatever else it is. Even if it's someone calling me and saying, oh my God, I'm so depressed right now. Can I have a reading with you for 20 minutes? And I get into the thick of it and I find out that there's synchronicity between what I've dealt with in my life and what they're dealing with right now. And my spirit guides bring these people to me so that I can help give them whatever reassurance and clarity I can give them. And that's what I believe the healing ability of being a psychic is. It's not about my ego. It's not about getting paid for a reading. A lot of times I'll do a reading for free if it's a grieving mom or if I know somebody can't afford it. It's about what value can I bring to this person's life. If it's easy just talking to me and I can pick up certain things, give them clarity. Like I was in an Uber the other day and I was talking to the Uber driver on my trip and I said, By March, your life is going to really be beneficial for you. I had a few drinks in me at the time, but the person looked at me like shocked. And I was like, they're like, I'm praying for that every day. I go, well, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And just offering that little help to someone or just that information, that little tidbit can help someone in a big way.
I might call myself a dark worker then, or at least a twilight worker. Not dark. Yeah, we could get real dark. Some people get real dark. A twilight worker in that I'm often encouraging people to rise to their best. And then I like to kick the supports out from under them and say, but have you thought of it this way? Or what is your weakness? What is your fear? I'm not saying in a bad way, but I'm saying maybe it's not your lack of opportunities that are holding you back, but your fear of what the opportunities might call you to do. And so then that makes them bummed out thinking, but I'm I'm a happy Twilight worker.
But that's a good approach. I believe that's a good approach you give. Why? Because you're giving someone the hope in one aspect, but then you're also saying that if this doesn't work out, there's still other alternatives in your life that you can look at.
And I want them to look at their power, their untapped power, undeveloped.
And resiliency. You're talking to them about resiliency. If you're knocking out the support, those what if thoughts, they deal with the struggle, the fears that doesn't exist. It's like what you're talking about, the reality. You help them understand their own reality.
Yeah, it's like, you know, teaching somebody to swim in the deep end. You don't want them over their head, but you want them to kick and feel the pressure of the gravity that they've got to counter with some effort of their own. They got to close your fingers. You've got to use your feet right. You can't just have me hold you up. And this is what I said, why I don't like a lot of psychology and coaching is it's holding you up. It's cheerleading and it's avoiding what you need to learn.
You know what I got to tell you?
What?
You're a teacher, what I'll call a sage, a teacher, whether or not you want to call yourself that. But my energy, when I read you, you're all about giving knowledge from what your life experiences have given you and bestowed on you. The clients you work with, you help them through these things that they get stuck in their own little loopholes and their patterns, and you help decipher and clear up that stuff by getting these people through their own experiences to figure it out themselves. You're helping people by giving them certain questions that they answer themselves and you guide them, but you're not there to tell them what to do and you're not there to instruct them on what the outcome's going to be. That's for them to figure out themselves. And I think what you do with your life approach and how you've got all these different things that you've married together, it's a really exciting in terms of how you approach it.
Let me talk about my failures. The ones that annoy me the most is my relationships with women. I have had two different women, and I put so much emphasis on my relationship. Maybe that's my problem. I don't call it codependent.
I suck at relationships, so I can relate to what you're saying.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So I'm so pissed off that both of these women have gone in their separate ways. I talk to them both all the time, but I'm dissatisfied with their lack of continued engagement. To my discomfort, I want the women, and the men are friends. How many friends do you need? My clients are my friend. I've got a dozen friends, and they're mostly men. And you can hear from the sort of adventure, high risk attitude that I take. I don't know, this is a stereotype, but let's just say, let's go whole hog here and say, women have been taught to be organized in their presentation and clear in the image they present. This is kind of the materialist commodity version of womanhood. I find most women would get upset when things go wrong because it means things are out of control. I love it when things go wrong. I just miss the bus, miss the plane, a flat tire. Great. Now we're going to do something new. Get in the rain, get all wet and cold.
You look at it as an adventure. That's why.
I just, my mountaineering
energy shows me that. Everything in your life is an adventure. And you're not afraid of, I'll say this, you mentioned failure earlier in your relationship. I don't call that failure. You're experiencing life. And look, like me, I'm 48. Have I ever been married? No. Have I had some failed relationships in my past? Yes. Do I hold on to that anymore? No, because I realize I can't control other people in my life. And if I don't fit and connect to certain people, there's nothing I can do about it. But what I can do is control how I perceive it, how I relate to it, self-love, all those other things. For you, having two kids and raising them and having all this life experience that you could then talk to your clients about when they have relationships go kaput, it's a life skill. And I don't believe in the word failure because I failed in a lot of things in my own life. But you know what? I look at it as if we're not living life and we're not taking risks, and sometimes you fall down and sometimes you regret things, then what's the point of us even being here?
I think that might be a male attitude. I'm not sure. It could be things changing with time. And I could be wrong. I don't care. But it does seem to be generating, on the basis of the feedback I'm getting, most of the men have that problem. When it's better to try and fail than just succeed. Success is not enough. And I get clients. They seem like they're eminently successful, but they're not satisfied. And okay, I can understand that they always bigger fish to fry and bigger things to fail at. So my two greatest failures are, I appreciate you saying they're not failures. Crashing airplanes, it looks like a failure to an outsider.
You learn how to fly better next time. You're not going to repeat the mistake and hurt your back again.
There are, yeah, but there are always worse mistakes you can make. So it's never to be complacent. And that's important. If I ever take up flying again, I will be more careful. I could blame lots of things, but ultimately it would only help if I take responsibility to fix them. And so I'm a different, it's interesting to say, in flying, most people are very rigid-minded. That's why flying has so many rules, and people stick within the rules. And when there's an accident, they say it's because you didn't stick within the rules. But the truth is the accidents are usually because too much crazy stuff happened and you couldn't figure out which rule to apply.
Can I draw a comparison to that?
Yeah.
You said it reminds me of practicing law. It's so dry. You have to follow every rule upon rule upon rule upon rule. And the thing I love what we're doing right now with this conversation, rules don't apply necessarily. You can live your life and not have this rule, that rule, this rule. It's like, I like being a lawyer and I enjoy it. I've done it for 20 years, but I feel liberated when I get to have this kind of conversation with you tonight and discuss these concepts, because the rules themselves can be thrown out the window and it could be the life experience and the intuition. And the, like you gave the example about athletes earlier. I'm fascinated by professional athletes or athletes who excel, like Olympians and professional football players or whoever. And I think part of it is because they can excel and they train their mind in such a way that they have laser focus and they can perform in such ways that they practice and practice and they sacrifice. But in the long run, they create this existence that only very few percent of our population can do. To me, that's a reflection of high levels of intuitive behaviors coupled with your ability to have this extreme focus and visualization. And it's untapped. I don't think that there's people who really understand the dynamics at work, how it actually all comes together. Fascinates me because I didn't have that in my life. I was a student, went to law school, did my own thing. When you talk about your own experiences in studying athletes and what you've seen, does it sound like similar to what I'm talking about, my own theory about intuition and alignment and being able to visualize and being able to have mental peak performance and laser focus and a lot of discipline and repetition and all those kind of things?
Yes, but you have to throw it away at the end because it's the journey, not the destination. So they give you a medal. So you were fastest on the 100 yards. Does it mean jack shit? No, not at all. It means nothing if it doesn't have meaning for you. This is the problem I get with my, I don't get, it's the problem that my high performance people bring to me is they've done all this stuff and they're at top of their game and it doesn't really mean anything to them. Now they've started to turn around and look. And that's the danger of having the laser focus and the utmost discipline. If it's not meaningful, you can still pursue it and you'll be rewarded. There's always somebody who will pay you to. Two people I think of, Johnny Depp on the one hand and Jim Carrey on the other. So Johnny Depp seemed to go right over the edge and lose his shit. He appeared to, from what we can tell, get too upset by life. At the same time, he was a celebrity and now he's got mud on his reputation. And then Jim Carrey, on the other hand, reached the same level of celebrity, and then he bailed out, and now he's an artist living anonymously somewhere. Two different ways to get to the top of your ladder. But in both cases, you don't stay at the top of your ladder. There's nothing at the top of the ladder. It's like mountaineering. There's nothing at the top of the mountain. You don't stay there. I mean, you might regret having gotten there or not gotten there, but it's not about there. There's nothing there. Nothing. It's the end of things. It's just air after that. And so what is the purpose of all that focus? And my answer is, there's no purpose. That's why I just like to do a lot of different things. I don't do them badly, or some of them I do badly, but I wish I could do them better, and I'm fascinated by them, like the relationships and the airplanes. And other things, like I did scuba diving. Okay, it's interesting. I don't need to do it anymore. You flap around under the water and
I find okay. You fascinating. Your story right now, energetically, as I hear you talk, because I get stuff off people's voices. I know I've just started telling people that that's one of the things I've learned I've been able to do recently is as you speak, I hear your vibrations of your voice and the energy that comes off you is fascinating to me because I don't think you're going to have one day like the next. I feel like you are literally a seeker of all. Being able to have as much different experiences in your life between people and places and things and just ideas. If anyone could float around in your brain right now, they'd be like, holy cow, you have the ability to think all these concepts
And then I just feel like,
let me give you three examples. One of the most exciting experiences I had scuba diving was lying on the ground, on the bottom in the sand next to a shark, just lying there for 5 minutes with a shark. Cause you said you read things off people's voice and their face. I felt I was reading things off that shark, and it was another consciousness. In another case, I was flying an airplane in a thermal with a hawk. So the hawk was over there and it was looking at me and I was looking at it. Hawks don't like people. They don't. That's why they leave. And they're never around for the most part. And you don't make pets out of them for the most part. And this hawk looked at me like I was not supposed to be there and I should leave. I thought, where do you get that? And another case was I came down in my house to in the morning to see a bag of flour scattered around the floor and a broken window. And I went out the front door and there was a bear. And the bear stood on its hind legs and it roared at me. It roared at me like they would have a Hollywood movie. And I practically shit my pants. It was like, talk about an energy. That energy. This is why animals don't need to kill each other. They have so much energy. They just scare their competitors away. And this bear just scared me right back into my house. And I shut the door and I thought, I've never met anybody with that energy before. And it was... the thing was only 3 feet tall. It felt like Darth Vader, you know.
Yes.
And so these are amazing experiences. I look for them, but there's a risk in that. There's a risk with sharks and bears and hawks.
You gotta take the risk in order to venture out.
Supposedly you're careful. I broke my back with the airplane. That was a little too far. But you know, so you have to sort of know where the safety net. This is the whole thing about mountaineering, you know, the guy on the rope and the falling and the catching and stuff. You know, there have been some lucky accidents.
I'll say it this way:
lucky ones.
Can you imagine bowling with the bumpers up where it's not going at all in the gutter ball, and you just—it's like you're guaranteed to hit the
thing. Oh, it would be so.
That's not living life. I'd rather live my life with the challenges and tell people, yeah, I fell down a few times. I've had failed relationships. I've doubted myself. I've had situations that I wish I could have done over differently, but when we look at the big picture, it's where we are now, not where we were then. And even negative experiences teach us something about ourselves that I'm just an optimist,
I think only negative experiences really teach us, because the positive ones just mean that you did it right the last time and you did it again right this time. What's new there?
I wanted to introduce you to the audience, and your background was so fascinating to me. I love having notable people on. My audience knows this about me. I develop relationships with people who come on my show, the ones that are notable like you, because for me, you might have an interest in what psychics are like or whatever, right? But then I'm looking at you and I'm like, damn, the things that you just described, the bear, the laying next to a shark, and the other example, I'm like fascinated by that. I don't have the gumption to go lay next to a shark at the bottom of a scuba diving or that kind of experience. You had that experience. You could pull that as a point of reference and say, when's the last time you laid next to a shark? When's the last time you saw a bear, 3 foot bear, power itself up and put on the act to scare you and you felt that energetic shift? That's huge.
It's the thing is that this is, you'll appreciate this. You have to embrace chaos, because in the order only comes more order. It's like the ground state of a molecule. It's ordered, it's stable, it's inert, it doesn't go anywhere. If that's your life, have a nice day. But if you want to change or grow or expand or see new places, Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. Have a nice time. Not for me.
I was just watching about that today, by the way. I was watching a show, just synchronicity here. I was before our interview earlier today, while I was eating my lunch, they were talking about the Mars One project and how anybody who gets that project is going to go a one-way trip to Mars and never come back. And I thought in my mind, I like the idea of giving back to the human race and the human species, but I like my life on Earth. I don't have a desire to go to Mars. I want to live my life out here. I got enough going on with my life as it is, with all the value and everything. I
don't like these equations. I always like to be able to turn around. I can't always. Like, I remember I did twice do mountain climbing alone without a rope. And in those cases, you really can't turn around. You can't go down. You can't go back. And if you're wise, you've made sure that you can go forward. But I, being the fool that I am, I wasn't sure I could go forward. Why did I do that? I was just stupid. But I guess I felt I had more to gain than lose.
You had adventure.
I don't know. That's true. In mountaineering, another one thing you learn in mountaineering is that you get to watch a lot of people kill themselves. And you can say, do I want to go there or not? And it's your choice. Because you can see what they did and how they thought, and now you can either join them or not. It's a good lesson, and that's why I don't do that anymore, because now I have a family, and I have other things to live for. At the time, I didn't. And I'm glad, maybe, I did those things, although I wouldn't be so glad if I had failed and were talking to my spirit body, and it would be regretful.
I'd be channeling you right now.
Yeah,
you're in the present form.
I can imagine. This is why ghosts hang around, because they didn't get to finish their life the way they wanted to. But I was able to finish that chapter. So now I have to pitch myself. I am a therapist, and I don't think therapy is fair. I don't think psychedelics should be called medicine. I don't think this is mental illness. And I work with people who generally don't agree, although some of them, you have to say, maybe you have a little bit of a problem here. But okay, that's what you've got. And I always like to turn it around and say, what's the word now? Neurodivergent. Maybe you've just got other skills, and it dysregulates you in the world because you're not expected to behave or see these things, like the psychic abilities.
Correct.
You know, so now, instead of thinking that you're nuts and you have to sleep with the light on and maybe some stuffed animals to keep you safe, maybe you want to go under the bed and into the dark closet and
adventure.
There you will meet your power energies, people, ancestors, guides. I don't know. If you don't test it, you won't find out. So this is what I try to do. So they should go to my website at mindstrengthbalance.com, and you can repeat that. And I
love the title. People. I love the name of your website. I'm not trying to be a fan person here, but mind, strength, balance. Those are words I always play around with when I talk to people, because I'm a Libra.
Good.
About balance.
They're good words.
They're great choice of words for your website. I think it fits your energetic makeup and who you are. And I think it's good for clients to understand that you can strengthen your mind by balancing yourself, and that things aren't no one, like you were talking about people who work hard, being a workaholic. I've done that in different stages of my life. If you don't have the balance, good luck working, being a workaholic. You could die of a heart attack unannounced. And next thing, there's your balance. It's out the window. You're done.
That's right. I have a client who says, I think I'm not going to live past 40 because I burned my candle at all three ends. And I said, okay, if you want to have a family, do you want to think of your kid who now says, I wish I had a father, but he died at 40. Mm. And now, so here you are, this overachiever. And how much have you overachieved when you created a family and then checked out?
Correct.
When they were still kids? You may not want to slow down for your own benefit, but if you want to be a fulfilled person, maybe you should slow down for the benefit of the people of the future. And that kind of hit him. He's like climbing a summit when there's really nothing up there. It's down here.
Getting to the top and going, okay, now what do I do? Oh, I got to go back. Oh my God. That's the realization people get when they climb these mountains, is you have to be prepared mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And if you're not, it could be life-threatening. And that's what I think you've learned yourself, just going on these tasks and challenges that you've overcome.
I haven't overcome them all. The ones I overcome, I leave behind.
I'm glad that you brought up mindstrengthbalance.com. Is there any other way our audience could reach out to you and contact you, or is it the website the best way for people to reach you?
Best way. It's got the books, it's got the blogs, the podcasts, and the services.
Okay, great. I am going to be sharing your information with our audience, and I'm excited about having you back on. And
we can go into science. I could tell you about physics, or we can go into psychics, and we could talk about spirits. I don't think they're all that different. It's just human experience.
You're right about
that. One corner or the other.
Thank you so much for coming on today in this initial episode with me and sharing your broad spectrum of knowledge, experience, and insight. It's been very appreciated that you were able to do this today with our audience. I'm glad we can make this happen.
Oh, thank you, Jason.
I just want to thank Lincoln for coming on the show today. This is not his only episode, because you can't take someone who's a quantum physicist, a neuropsychologist, a hypnotherapist, a clinical counselor, among all these other talents that he has as a parent, educator, author, mountaineer, and you can't just put that in one episode. That's not possible. And I recognize that. And I think one of the best things I'll say about our initial talk with Lincoln today is there's no set path to take in your life. We can journey out. We can try things. Too many of us have fears that limit our ability to advance ourselves or grow. And I think Lincoln's an example of somebody who doesn't necessarily utilize personal fear to dictate where to wind up. If you can break your back while gliding and piloting a glider and then yet go back, and if you can lay with a shark in the middle of the ocean while scuba diving, these are life experiences. And I would encourage every single person that listens to this episode to appreciate your life experiences, even the setbacks, even a diagnosis of cancer or a divorce or whatever it is. And look at your life from the vantage point of where you're going, not where you've been. Yes, it's important to see where you are, but life is an adventure. And that's what I really loved about having Lincoln on today. He has that adventurous in his spirit, and yet he's a teacher. And he's an educator in his own right. And I say that with the utmost respect, because I know traditional education doesn't necessarily help us learn. It's life. It's the challenges of life to help us learn. We're going to have him back on. And I just want everyone in the audience to check out Lincoln's website. And we're going to have it in the show notes, but it's mindstrengthbalance.com. Check it out. Contact him. Set up sessions with him if you want to. Just read his books. Knowledge is so valuable for us, guys. And we're living in an age right now where we're in between two steps. And I think the more you can educate yourself and the more you can put yourself out there and take risks and not have the fears limit you, the better your life is going to pan out over the long run. Thank you so much for tuning in this episode. Until next time, stay positive, because when you're positive, anything's possible.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Social Psychic Radio Show. Don't forget to join us for another episode next time. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give us a review on iTunes. You can also check us out on Facebook, and don't forget to visit the Social Psychic YouTube channel. Until next time, it's a big world out there. Keep an open mind, embrace your paradigms, and know that the universe is always yours to explore.
Hey there, I'm DC. I host the Rock Podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interview.
Electric Acid.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.